afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm your guest, kinda, your co-host, Debbie Bacigalupi.
She's pretending to be Bill.
Only in a certain way, because, you know, Erin and Bill are married. So let's be careful
there. We don't want to get that messed up. We'll be flying those new flags, you know, the pink and blue and white ones that have taken over Congress.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they've replaced the POW MIA flags. We now have transgender flags, but you don't have to put them up. But interestingly enough, someone who shall remain nameless thought they were Easter flags because the show will be playing in April. So just for some frame of reference.
Don't start making me laugh
they
already.
Were Easter flags. Well, I'm like, no, the world has moved on. You must be old. Okay, he's my age. So our sponsor this hour. It's really weird to pre-record. It always feels like it's like we just did this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm living in Groundhog Day. So our sponsor this hour is Team Power. They are everything about Kubota and John Deere tractors, serving Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. And they are the certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job.
Can I get rid of weed?
I read
weed?
That right off the page.
Can I get rid of weed?
I'm going to find that out. We're going to talk about that on Sunday because it's taking over Northern California, stupid weed. You can find them at 530-226-9226, and they are located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City.
Nice.
And Bill, I'm sure, will say, okay, you're never allowed to do the commercial again.
Sorry, Bill.
Too late. So our guest, and Ashley is in there laughing because she was thinking that, weren't you? Yeah,
mm-hmm. Maybe.
Maybe just a teeny bit.
It's kind of fun to be in person, and unfortunately, Alex can't be here with us live, like live and in person.
No, we have him hostage on the phone.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you everything I know about Alex, and then Debbie can embellish. So he is an award-winning international journalist. A real journalist, imagine that. We should just stop there. That's really all you need to say. He's an educator, an author, and a consultant. And he's written for a wide variety of publications in the United States and abroad. Currently serves as a contributor to WorldNet Daily and an education writer for the Freedom Project Media, a foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine. And how are you a foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine? Do you pretend you're from somewhere else?
No, believe it or not, I've been overseas almost all my life. So this whole being in America thing is kind of new for me.
Oh, yeah, because I thought about that. I'm like, wait a minute. Why would you be a foreign correspondent to an American magazine? And you're also a contributor to law enforcement, intelligent briefs, and all sorts of other things. So you're just kind of an all-around guy.
He is, and he's got four adorable boys with his beautiful wife, Tina. And they just moved from Sweden to Miami. Well, they have...
Oh, that's confusing.
But these kids are so cute. So I know Alex from United Nations conferences. We met at the Paris conference in 2015, otherwise known as the Paris Agreement. And ever since then, we've just clicked. And he's just, Alex.
You guys were in the roped off hater section? Or you had to wear scarlet letters on your outfit?
Oh, but we've got some stories to tell from the most recent conference we just got back from, which was in Poland, where I got to meet his adorable children. And it was out there snowing in the house that we had rented to stay in during the week that we were there at the conference. And the kids were building snowmen. Mind you, by the way, this is a global warming conference. And it's dumping snow, and the kids are outside playing, and they're building these huge snowmen. And I'm interviewing them, and I said, is this what are we doing here? And we're at a conference, right? And what's it about? And and I said something like global warming, right? And one of the younger kids goes, it's not global warming, it's global cooling.
Good training.
Anyway, Alex is just a dear friend of mine, and we've done conferences together, and he's just, you are just one credible dude. We have friends saying that this guy is going to be the next, you know, President Washington, whatever. And Alex, you're just a real, real gem to freedom and liberty.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Debbie. And just for the listeners out there to know, I'm not actually nearly as awesome as Debbie makes it sound,
Boy.
But I just sure appreciate the kind words.
<That's so fantastic. laughs>
I really appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right. So before we started, we sort of talked about what we might talk about, which, of course, got us nowhere because then there were too many things. So
yeah. Alex,
where would you like
up to too many things. I mean, seriously, from living all over the world to speaking how many languages, 5 different languages, something like that. You know, your worldly experience is just incredible. So you have a real, real good view of what's going on out in the world, Alex, whether it's children's education or supposed man-made global warming, drugs, all these different things from your experience and living around the world. So just a real place for educating people.
Yeah, well, thank you guys so much for having me on the program. And, you know, speaking of all the things that are really important in the world, I think the global warming issue is just so important. I know Patrick Moore is coming on, and he can talk more about that. But Debbie and I have had a good time at these UN global warming conferences. We're really outnumbered. I mean, it's like totally surrounded by people drinking the Kool-Aid, or at least people pretending to drink the Kool-Aid. But it's actually really serious. It's really important because if you listen to what they're saying, if you look at the agreements they're coming up with, if you see what they're doing, they are building one of the pillars for what they hope will be the system of global governance. And that is, it's all based on the man-made global warming hypothesis, which I think is provably wrong, as I know a lot of the scientists you guys will have on and have had on will explain. But, you know, it's the audacity of trying to convince people, of really children at this point, they know the grown-ups are not going to believe it, but to convince children that the gas they exhale, carbon dioxide, is pollution, and that we need to let the UN regulate and tax this, it's just incredible that somebody could have even thought to try that, and yet it's working because they've got the kids in the schools.
Yeah, they have them singing little songs, and, you know, they've got all these little rhymes and do all these projects, and as a kid in school, you're not really allowed. Dissent isn't really one of the choices.
Alex, what? Okay, so they're saying that there's a problem out there in the world that we must tackle, that in less than 11 years, unless we act now, life will be uninhabitable and unrecognizable. That is the slogan we kept hearing at the most recent United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change conference in Poland. So tell us, what is the problem that they're trying to solve, and what is their proposed solutions for us, and how are we involved in that?
Well, on the surface of things, they're literally trying to convince us that CO2, you know, the gas of life, is this toxic pollution that's driving catastrophic global warming and is going to kill us all. And of course, the solution is exactly the same as the solution for global cooling back when they were pushing the global cooling hypothesis in the 70s and into the 80s. Basically, give a lot of money to the UN, give up a lot of national sovereignty, pay money to the UN, you know, for your carbon emissions, your carbon sins. And, you know, if this didn't have billions and trillions of dollars worth of government money behind it and the UN and government, if people tried to say this to you, you know, we're all doomed in 12 years unless we submit and repent of our carbon, you think, wow, this guy, you know, he sounds like a doomsday cult leader. You know, do we put him in a rubber room or do we just ignore him? But because they have all this money and all this prestige and all this power, you've got people who have bought into this and people who are at least pretending to buy into this because they know their career depends on it or whatever. But ultimately, what they're trying to do is gain control over every aspect of our lives. And there's almost nothing that you could think about that would give them a pretext to do that except CO2, right? What other activity, what other thing can you think of that would allow these totalitarians to have a pretext to control every aspect of your life? The only thing is CO2, because you exhale CO2. The average person exhales about 2 pounds of CO2. And so when you, and there's nothing you can do. I mean, you can't drive your car, you can't sleep, you can't turn on your television, you can't turn on your light bulb, you can't light a candle, for crying out loud, without emitting CO2. And so if they can convince you that there's something wrong with your CO2 emissions, then they can control and regulate and tax every aspect of your life. So that's why this agenda is so dangerous. It requires, you know, if you believe this hypothesis and that the UN is going to save us, it requires total tyranny. And, you know, that is what's at stake here. If we lose this battle, we will have tyranny.
How you can't put a finer point on that.
Yeah, and
right. Just to be blunt.
yeah, just to, you know, cut to the chase. Let's take a really quick break so we'll be ahead of the game and not have to have Alex read our mind while we try to cut him off. Because we're not very good at that.
I can't wait to see what song you've picked.
Yeah. Well, I've got some other ones up my sleeve. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Your neighborhood, they human race was dying out. No one left to scream and shout. People walking on the moon. Smog will get you pretty soon. Everyone was hanging out.
Even co-opted the Doors. They're worried that our little world won't last. And of course, Jim Morrison is long gone.
It's too bad we couldn't close the door on this whole thing.
Exactly.
That's what I'm thinking.
Put it in a box and send it down the river. So you had a question for him.
Yeah. So we're speaking to Alex Newman. He is a
good one.
Yeah. He's good.
Tell people who he is.
He is really good. He is... gosh, probably the best journalist, investigative journalist as well out there, exposing so many things from Common Core to climate change and supposed man-made anthropogenic global warming. But he's not just, Alex is one of those guys who actually walks the talk, and he goes to these conferences. So he hears firsthand. He does real investigation. He's not just regurgitating, you know, what other people are, you know,
he doesn't just watch CNN for his information.
In fact, you could go to libertysentinel.org, libertysentinel.org, and find out more about Alex. But you can also go to We the People Radio website. And Aaron's put up some links and some great things about Alex Newman. And even the deep state, Alex. So, you know, how does you do an expansive, an awesome presentation. You're available for presentations around the United States. How is the deep state involved in this supposed man-made global warming scheme?
There is no doubt about it, Debbie. And thanks again for the kind words. You're too kind. But, I would say this whole man-made global warming hoax is a crucial project of the deep state. And we don't have to speculate on this. You know, a lot of people say, oh, conspiracy theory. There's no theory here. You know, go back to, say, 1991 when the Club of Rome met and they came up with their report, Global Revolution, where they talked about, you know, well, we need to find some kind of common enemy to unite mankind. And so we decided that man would be the common enemy, right? This idea that humans are polluting the planet and so on. So they came up with this idea that, well, you know, how are we going to control people? How are we going to justify global governance institutions and all-powerful states, if you will? And they came up with this idea that, hey, we just need to make it seem like humans are bad for the planet. And when you go to these conferences, one of the most revealing of these UN conferences that I ever went to was in Rio de Janeiro in 2012, the UN Conference on Sustainable Development. And it's like if Americans could see this, if they could just have any inkling of what was going on there, the whole thing would be shut down right away. The thing was chaired by a Chinese communist who was most famous for, you know, giving awards to the generals who slaughtered a bunch of kids at Tiananmen Square and who openly says anti-American things when he's drunk and talks about how evil America is. So this was the chairman of the whole conference, a Chinese communist. And as you walk around, the image that most stuck with me was this poster they had. It was, you know, an anthropomorphic Earth, an Earth with some eyes and a nose, and he had a thermometer sticking out of his mouth, and he was sick. And the doctor comes up. The doctor was the son. And the son says, I know your problem. You have humans. And so this anti-human idea is so pervasive among the deep state. And when I say the deep state, I guess it's important I clarify, because a lot of people think we're just talking about the rogue bureaucrats. You know, now in the context of Trump, people are thinking, intelligence agencies, FBI, things like that. But it's much deeper than that. It's this whole interlocking network of secretive organizations, things like the Council on Foreign Relations, which is probably one of the premier outposts of the deep state in the United States, if you will. The Bilderberg groups, for example, I've been to two of these, never as an invited guest, obviously. But all these kind of elitists and their useful idiots getting together, often behind closed doors and plotting out our future, And I don't think you can understand the man-made global warming hoax if you don't understand that there are these people who hate liberty, who want to promote globalism. And, you know, they admit this stuff. You won't read about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post, but they admit this stuff in their own speeches and their own writings. And I think the climate hoax is inseparable from the deep state.
And that's how they plan to get control for themselves.
Precisely.
And take it away from
it's the ultimate tool.
Sure. And you have to be afraid. So you have to believe us. But when you look at their credentials, most of them don't have any, or they have credentials in some other field, yet they continue to say that
97%.
Well, the other day it was like 99.9. I thought, really? That's gone up? it's like, they weren't happy with 97. So like 99.9% of all scientists agree. And it's like, all what scientists? Because we have people on this program all the time. Dr. Willie Soon was on, will be on a couple of weeks before you, and he doesn't agree, and he's a really impressive scientist. So maybe he's the 0.1.
Well, yeah, and Alex has a response for the 97%, which is why we need to be educated more and more in this. Yeah, and you know, before Alex tells us like what you know
the
that
suspense.
While we are in Poland in December. After the United Nations conference, Alex could not wait with his microphone and camera going, video camera, to interview some of the, you know, the bureaucrats coming out of this, you know, 30,000 people at this United Nations conference to start asking them the real hard questions. And Alex was just like a kid in a candy store. It was so fun to watch. And one of the things that, you know, when Alex said, you know, I'm from American media, do you want to talk about global warming? We don't believe in global warming. And these guys were like, what? So Alex, like, tell us, you know, they can't, all they do is come back with these same talking points. The seas are rising. 97% of scientists say
ocean acidification.
Yeah, the ocean acidification. You know, all the same talking points. What do you, so when someone says, you know, to you, oh, but 97% of scientists agree, Alex, that yes, man is causing global warming.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many answers to that proving that it's a hoax. It really was a lot of fun standing outside of that UN summit interviewing people, you know, the Costa Rican environment minister and a climate scientist and all these kinds
You're
of
You're like a shark with your mouth open.
Stuff. He was. He's like,
just
come on
really
in.
Right into your mouth. And Trump really set it up perfectly for us, you know, by going around saying this is a hoax and we're not going to participate. You know, I could just stand outside there and say, hey, my president says the whole pretext of this conference is a hoax. What do you have to say to that? And you can see their kind of blood is boiling, the smoke coming out their ears. Arr, you know, they hate Trump so much. It was just brilliant. But the reality is this 97% hoax is a complete and total lie. If you actually look at the fake studies that underpin this and you drill down into the data, you see that the entire thing is a fraud, right? One of them, for example, looked at published papers having to do with climate science. Almost none of them came to the conclusion that man was primarily responsible for global warming, and yet the way they broke it down, they say, oh, well, 97% agree. It is simply untrue. Of course, there's never been a survey of scientists, and a lot of times, you know, these scientists, I've interviewed many, many dozens of top scientists, and I know you guys have, too. I was just in Sweden a couple months ago, and I interviewed Dr. Nils Oxenmoerner about the sea level question, and nobody is more qualified to comment on this than he is. In fact, the United Nations thought he was so qualified, they made him the lead sea level reviewer for the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And you can go, you can watch this interview. I said, hey, you were on the UN IPCC, you were in charge of the sea level section. Are the seas rising, and are we all in real danger? He said, absolutely not. The seas are not rising. There's not even any such thing as global sea level. In some places it rises, some places it falls. If anything, sea levels are going to be going down. We're going into a period of global cooling. The hypothesis that CO2 emissions are driving man-made or are driving global warming or climate change is false. It's not happening. I told the United Nations all this before they went to press with their report. They refused to correct it, and so the guy resigned. Now, you would think this would be, you know, a major international scandal, and every media outlet in the world would be breaking down the guy's door to try to get a comment. Crickets, right? Nothing. And so, you know, this is the kind of stuff, you know, when they say, oh, the UN IPCC, the world scientists, the world's top scientists agree that the Earth is warming and it's your fault, that's not true, right? I've interviewed many of these guys who say the whole thing is a fraud. And when they tried to blow the whistle on it, suddenly they were taken off and nobody wanted to listen and they were made persona non grata. So it's a scam. It's very easy to demonstrate it's a scam, but you won't hear it from the fake media. So
I'm so glad you brought up the crickets, because that's the, you know, that's our former or future protein source.
Exactly. That's what the UN says. Let them eat bugs, because bugs are sustainable and cows are not, right?
Wow. And, you know, I don't understand why people fall for this. Is it just a fear thing? I mean, I think it's like a weird addiction. I think people get addicted to being afraid. And so, you know, they never got over the boogeyman under the bed, and so this is the new one. So they've got a rail against it, and there's no answer, and there's no solution. And
you know, there's been nothing better, though, for our movement, because a lot of us...
Like a mental health professional here just to sit in on our show so we can, you know... Oh, by the way, what causes that? Except there's one mental health professional we won't have on, because he drives a thing that looks like a Skittle with a giant electrical cord in it.
Uh-oh.
Needs a psychiatrist.
Uh-oh. Don't, I don't know anything about him.
I don't want to bring that up again.
There we go. Okay.
I've got problems.
Aaron, you made me lose my train of thought here.
So sorry.
It was going to be brilliant. Whatever I was going to say, it was going to just be brilliant.
But Debbie, do you remember that scientist we interviewed in Paris? Both of us interviewed him.
Oh, Dr. Yvonne Marco.
And he gave us a real plausible answer to this very question. He said, you know, people have this internal sense, you know, this kind of need for religion. And so, you know, traditionally in Western civilization, which has been based on kind of the Bible, people have understood that, hey, you know, humans are sinful and we need God to redeem us. Well, as the establishment, if you will, has marginalized Christianity and the biblical worldview, they needed to replace that with something. And so they came along with this idea that actually your sins are your carbon emissions, your carbon footprint. That's your sin.
Oh, I like this. This actually makes the most sense of anything I've heard.
Right. And then the UN comes in, and the UN is your savior, because they're going to save you from your carbon sins. And you can buy carbon credits from Al Gore. It's kind of like your indulgences. And, you know, he said this is literally a cult. And there's a whole bunch of these incredible scientists who said this. Richard Lindzen, meteorologist from MIT, says these people behave like a cult. They will not look at evidence that contradicts their worldview. And I think that's part of it. You know, as people have pushed aside true religion into the void, has stepped this blatantly phony cult-like climate scam. It's tragic. But I think the scientist who has since passed away, he was right on the money.
I saw a good tagline that fits with that. It was at the end of a lady's email, and it says, "I didn't say it was your fault. I said I was blaming you."
Well, you know,
I think that's the premise they're working on. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll come right back. Our guest is Alex Newman, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined when out of his sight to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
For all you climate change deniers
out
there.
Two of my favorite crazy songs. And it's interesting, though. Debbie said, how do you know all the words to all these songs, like the Joni Mitchell song, Twisted? And I laughed. It's like, because I learned it in junior high, and all of a sudden I had that weird feeling. That's what they're doing to all these kids.
Yeah.
The songs that these kids are all going to know growing up are all these weird, the earth is dying. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to find music for today. I listened to a zillion of these songs, and I just couldn't bear to play any of them, all
yeah.
sung by these little kids.
And that's our future. That is our future, those
so
kids.
So the songs they will remember as, you know, that they'll sing along to, or they'll hear a little tune, and it'll immediately bring them back to a time period, is all death, destruction, sadness, you know.
Yeah.
And here they'll be like me, you know, they'll be 57 years old, thinking about when they were 12 years old, humming along to a song, and that 12-year earth, you know, expectancy didn't really work out. They still have to have a job, and
yeah.
they do need to save for retirement, and
yeah.
all those things are still going on.
Well,
it didn't end.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, Alex Newman is our guest today, and he's just this awesome award-winning journalist, travels the world. And
who actually does journalism, which is actually yeah. the thing you should mention.
And he's a presenter and does all, you know, just look him up on his website, Alex, which is LibertySentinel.org. Is that right? Liberty Sentinel?
That's right. Yeah, that's my personal one. It's LibertySentinel.org. And the great majority of my articles on climate have gone at in the New American Magazine or thenewamerican.com. And then I've got some climate ones also at WorldNet Daily and a variety of different publications. So.
One of your specialties is and concerns is education, like Aaron brought up, the youth. Do you see this as indoctrination to our youth as a problem? Are you seeing like the evidence of the kids out there? And you know, actually, before you answer that, I will note that we both were just shocked at the number of young people at the most recent United Nations conference.
It was incredible, Debbie. All these little kids singing about the earth dying and the need for the UN to save us. You know, exploitation of little children for political purposes. But, you know, the answer to your first question, Debbie, I think I'm not just concerned about it. I think this is going to be the defining issue. And so, actually, we just put out a huge special report. We dedicated the whole February 4th issue of the New American Magazine to this topic because it transcends all the other issues. And climate is a big part of it. You know, probably 10% of this special report is dedicated to the indoctrination of the children through UN programs that are being brought in through the U.S. Department of Education and state departments of education and local school boards. They're brainwashing the kids to believe in the man-made global warming hypothesis and also in the ideology of sustainable development. So Agenda 21, and you know this very well, Debbie, I mean, you're one of the nation's foremost experts on Agenda 21, but Chapter 36 deals with education. So they recognize that if you want to succeed with imposing this totalitarian ideology on people, you have to brainwash the kids. And so they make that clear in Chapter 36, Agenda 2030, which is the kind of the new and improved Agenda 21, but for whole nations and even regional governments like the European Union. Again, goal number four is education. They refer to your kids as critical agents of change, and they say in the document, the kids have to be so educated, quote unquote, that they will not just accept or submit sustainable development, but they'll actually promote sustainable development. So the whole secret weapon, if you will, of these plotters is the educational system, and it's global now. You know, we have Common Core in America. The UN has a World Core curriculum that they're pushing worldwide now, and at the core of this is this pseudo-environmentalist nonsense that says we need a global government to save us from real and imagined environmental problems that are your fault. And you know, as an extension of that, we need to reduce the number of people. So the UN has the UN Population Fund that works to reduce the human population all over the world. And it's kind of all-encompassing. But all of these issues, you know, whether it's gun rights or abortion or, you know, religious freedom or even free speech, all of them go right back to education. You know, if they can brainwash 85% of the kids, which is about the number of kids that are in the public school system right now, they will own the future, and they know it.
Yeah, I think that we have a real big responsibility on our hands to I guess, diseducate, making up a word here, these children who, you know, just walking around the United Nations conference in December and asking them to prove to us where human beings are causing this catastrophic damage to planet Earth. And, Alex, they cannot answer the question.
No, they can't. And, you know, the even more ironic than that is that the most polluted societies in the world are the societies that use the economic and social model that the UN is promoting as the solution to these environmental problems, right? You want to see pollution, go to the former Soviet Union. You want to see a destroyed environment, go to communist China, right? I mean, these are the societies that are filled with toxic waste and filth. They've ruined their rivers and their oceans and their forests. And America, by contrast, or Switzerland or Australia, I mean, these are the countries with the cleanest environments in the world. So you're telling me we need to give up our freedom, we need to give up free markets, we need to give up our ability to control our own destiny to save the environment. We're going to replace it with this kind of global central planning, total government ideology, and the environment's going to improve? I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous, but these little kids don't know any better. This is what they're being taught in the government schools, and I think that is the real threat. You know, they're never going to get to me. They're never going to get to Debbie. They're never going to get to Aaron. They're never going to get to sensible adults who had some, you know, training and know how to read and can educate themselves.
And people who have real religion.
Exactly. Yep. But when they've got the minds of the young, all bets are off.
It just seems so doom and gloom. I hate to be Debbie Downer here.
But your name is Debbie.
But my name is, nicely. Yes. And so, you know, Alex, I'm sitting here going, and I know this stuff, right? Because I go to these darn conferences and with you. But I'm just like, what do we do? Like, how do we get our voices out there? Because you look at scientists like, for example, Dr. Willie Soon, who's being shut down. They don't want his science, his studies, to be out there.
Yeah, because it totally blows their whole deal. Well, it's interesting to me, though, because if we really think about it, everybody is some kid's aunt or uncle or grandma or grandpa or next-door neighbor or teacher. I mean, everyone has kids in their orbit. I think maybe we need to be a little more proactive.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, that's what we're, and Debbie, I think you're well suited to be Debbie Downer, just, you know, for the name. But, you know, in reality, I think there's a lot of reasons why we ought to be optimistic. You know, even the censorship that we're seeing, like from the big tech companies, you know, trying to silence voices and rigging their algorithms and shadow banning and banning, as far as I'm concerned, that's proof that people are waking up. Even in their rigged marketplace of ideas where their algorithms try to shut us down, they still can't compete. So they finally have to just come out and ban us. And, you know, on the positive side, as far as the education goes, there's a lot of good things happening, too. You know, in America today, in every one of the 50 states, every parent has the legal right to yank their child out of a government school and teach them at home or put them in a good Christian school or find, you know, an online school. There's a million different options out there today, and it's happening. You know, it's happening in large numbers. More and more Americans are getting fed up with the school system and yanking their kids out. So there's a lot of good things happening, too. And, you know, ultimately, I think if we're people of faith and we have faith in God, I think, you know, we ought to be very happy. I mean, we know we're on the winning team, and we know the truth is going to come out in the end. But, you know, even here in the physical, I think there's a lot of good things happening that ought to give us hope and cause for optimism. But it's not an excuse to sit on the sidelines and say, well, I'll just let other people do the heavy lifting. You know, all of us need to be doing what we can, whether that's reaching out to the children in our lives or sharing information or, you know, doing what you guys are doing with the radio program, going around doing public speaking. Everybody can do something to help raise awareness, to help expose the crazy stuff, the criminal stuff that's going on. And together we can win this fight.
Yeah, because you start looking at, you look at the things that they're pushing, and it just doesn't make any sense. Like even now, I don't remember where I read it, but all their little recycling programs are all starting to blow up because they cost a fortune and nobody's, and it also makes no sense to me that, you know, you're going to scrub out your little tomato, you know, ketchup thing. You're going to get all the, you know, all the tomato-ness out of it. So you're going to use a ton of water. You're going to wash the thing. Then you're going to throw it in the recycle bin. I'm sorry. How does that actually come out?
Oh, is that what you're supposed to do now?
Apparently. Because apparently we're stupid and we think that the pizza boxes are recyclable, which apparently they're not. Newsflash.
Yeah.
So therefore, put your pizza box in the recycle bin.
I know. Therefore, just put everything in the garbage and just be done with it.
Exactly. Well, that's the reality. They're putting all this stuff on ships to China to recycle, quote unquote, and then China just dumps it right in the ocean.
Exactly.
It's a total hoax. And that really brings me to, I think, one of the most hopeful things on our side. We have a huge advantage over the other side. It always seems like we're outnumbered and outfunded, and maybe we are, but we have an advantage that they can't overcome.
We're fun.
And that is the truth, right?
Sorry,
they've got trillions of dollars, and we don't, but we have the truth, and really that's all we need. So.
And we're a lot more fun. So really, if you're going to jump on a moving train, jump on the one that's fun, for heaven's sakes.
Amen.
Gotta take one more quick break, and we're going to come with back with our guest, Alex Newman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me.
Little Red Riding Hood.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
See, how can you have all that doom and gloom?
I know, I love that song.
When you listen on, it's not as cheerful, but if you only need 30 seconds, you can find the fun part, the cheerful part. So, Alex, you know, if you had 10 minutes left, say, to give a message to people, where do you want to go?
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you for having me on. And you know,
we're planning on making you do this more.
You're going to be a regular guest.
We're planning on forcing you to do this more often.
We're like, oh, my gosh, it's so short.
You guys are awesome. So
he's so good. I just want to keep talking to him. It's like, no, really, only an hour?
Well, you know, the thing is, people can, in an environment like this where, you know, there's a little silliness and, you know, it's kind of a lighter conversation, people can actually learn things. And we can you can be directed to where you need to go for the information if you want more.
You know, and this is such a serious topic. It really is. And people get really, I mean, there's so much that lies on this whole anthropogenic, like everything, like the air you breathe, as Alex brought up earlier. And it could seem so serious. But you know what, Alex? We go to these conferences and we have fun, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the people who are skeptical of this theory, those are the people that have fun at these conferences. You know, Mark Morano and you know, a lot of your friends, Debbie. But these are the people who are having fun, who are, you know, spreading the truth, who are exposing the lies, and we do it all while having a great time. So, you know, I just love what you guys said earlier. You know, not only do we have the truth on our side, we have a fun side too, right? So come join with us and, you know, help get the truth out there, help expose evildoers and craziness and bad policy. And, you know, if I had 10 minutes left to really emphasize, I would just reemphasize what I've said about education. You know, it is at the heart of all these other issues. And if we don't deal with it, you know, then I'd get really concerned for the future. And whether your issue is gun rights or property rights or abortion or, you know, all these things, if we let them brainwash all our kids, we're going to lose on all those issues. But if we succeed in protecting our kids, we can stop it. And so we put together this special report that kind of covers the whole thing. You know, we break down the indoctrination, the deliberate dumbing down, you know, the sexualization of the children, teaching them that they might have been born in the wrong body, and you know, they just mutilate
that
their genitals and take a bunch of hormones. Sorry.
Yeah, that is running wild these days, and should be
it
considered
is.
Child
in California,
abuse.
Especially, you guys know, huh? The UCLA did a study, and they said like 27% of kids in California now, 12 to 17, are gender nonconforming. I mean, do we have to wait until it's 100% before we say, hey, wait a minute, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea, right? So I just hope parents out there, you know, take this message to heart. Take steps to protect your children from this. You know, go get a copy of this special report and give it to your pastor. You know, we really hope that pastors will get involved. Pastors are so important, and unfortunately in America, so many of them have been unwilling to speak out on really important issues that really matter. You know, they don't want to maybe offend somebody in the congregation or something, but these are things that matter. And, you know, our religious liberties matter, as the well-being of our children matters. And so I hope that pastors out there will get involved, parents get involved, and, you know, everybody out there. You know, I guess that's the real takeaway, is get involved. You know, support radio programs like this one. You know, bring Debbie Bacigalupi to your town to expose Agenda 21 and how it's being implemented in your community. I mean,
everybody should have a Debbie Downer in their back pocket. Absolutely.
You know, and there's the headlines, you know, as you bring up all these topics, Alex, it just, you know, what we're hearing in the headlines, I mean, there's been no greater gift in my mind than Alexandria O'Communist.
Right. And it's true. I mean, now at this point, these people are shouting from the rooftops what they're planning to do to us, what they are doing to us. AOC is a perfect example of that. You know, we're going to get rid of airplanes and farting cows. Like, give me a break. You know, do you want to go back to living in the Stone Ages? And as Patrick Moore said, you know, to quote Patrick Moore from the interview I did with him a few weeks ago, every person on the planet almost would end up dead if these kooky ideas were implemented. You know, he was talking about Americans turning to cannibalism because there's no more fuel to get the food into the cities. I mean, is that the kind of idiocy that we want? Do we really want to go back to having lifespans of 30 years? Do we want to go back to, you know, children dying from preventable diseases and starvation? It's totally crazy. You know, if you just let people be free, people will produce wealth, people will, you know, govern themselves. But unfortunately, you know, we live in a dangerous time. And so I think everybody listening needs to get active in this fight and do whatever they can to help spread the truth and expose the lies.
Yeah, and now more than ever, I think, you know, a lot of people have said to me over the years, and I know Aaron, too, is, you know, what we talk about, and probably you, too, that, you know, oh, we're Chicken Little, the sky is falling. And yet everything that we've been trying to get out there to, I just hate the overused term of wake people up, but for lack of a better phrase right now, to wake people up, everything we've said is coming to fruition. And so, you know, the Senate, I think, or Congress just voted against this whole, you know, green, raw, ugly deal thing. And Trump just...
But the left still loves it.
And they love it. Mm-hmm. And so if I were like a naysayer out there, and Debbie, you're just a, or Alex, you're a Chicken Little with, you know, going around saying the sky is falling, I'd be saying, you know, just like with supposedly Trump taking us out of the Paris Agreement, oh, we're okay. It's not going to happen here. This is the United States. What say you?
Yeah, we're the opposite of the Chicken Little. And it's the other side that's saying we're all doomed in 12 years unless we let the UN tax the air with the gas we exhale. We're the anti-Chicken Littles, right? In the 70s, they were literally publishing articles in the leading magazines of the country saying that we're all doomed from global cooling and the government should go melt the Arctic ice cap with black soot. I mean, that is Chicken Little stuff. We're the ones saying, no, 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 it's all going to be fine. You know, just keep calm. Don't give up your liberty. Don't give up your money. So, I mean, I think time has shown that we're the ones who are being the opposite of the Chicken Littles. And the other side is the side that's using fear porn to try to stampede people into these crazy solutions.
Fear porn. We've done whole shows on that with Jim.
You just got Aaron excited.
I love that.
You
I love
just
that
got
expression,
her excited.
Fear porn. I'm like, oh, that's it. That's the one we didn't use yet.
And, you know, the reality is now these people have come out of the closet. You know, I point to David Rockefeller's autobiography. He wrote a book called Memoirs shortly before he died. And if you go to page 405, he tells you that some people even accused my family and I of being internationalists or globalists, as we call them today, of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global system, a one-world political and economic order, if you will. And then he says, if that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. So here's a guy admitting that he's conspiring with a secret cabal of globalists to create a one-world order. I mean, that is a smoking gun confession. What more is there to say? Do we want this kind of one world order run by these self-appointed elites, or do we want to keep our freedom and our constitution and our ability to govern ourselves? I think for most Americans, the choice would be crystal clear.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, just to kind of put some numbers to it that people could relate, the Forest Service has about 30,000 employees, We don't seem to be able to get a grip on that. The VA is, you know, obviously running on the crazy train track. Sometimes they do a great job, but a lot of times if you have to use it a lot, not working so good. They have 360,000 employees. Can't fix that either. So you can't fix the little one. You can't fix the big one. Now let's make it a worldwide government. What could go wrong?
Right. Let's put them in charge of our health care and our yes. gas that we'll pay on. I mean, what could people be thinking? It's so ludicrous.
So do you think that the green, new, raw, ugly deal is over? Or do you think they're going to try and push segments of it through? And they'll push till they get it.
Yeah, I think that's the real threat. And you know, what these people often do is they'll come out with some, and you know, Saul Alinsky advocated this in his book, Rules for Radicals. You come out with this outlandish, ridiculous idea that everybody would reject on its face, and then you have the quote-unquote sensible people come in with the more, you know, compromise option,
yeah,
which is only
Bernie's
half of
right
what
now.
The original one demanded.
Yep.
And that's what's the real risk right now.
Yeah, Bernie's being the dad at the dinner table right now. He's
come up with a sensible plan. Huh?
Yeah.
And you know what we've talked about it at these United Nations conferences with people like Mark Morano and Craig Rucker, and who will be on Aaron's show in the near future, is that Trump, like him or not, is really the only one in D.C. who continues to exploit this climate change stuff. And it seems like almost every one of them, and there may be a few good, you know, there may be a few good people left who are still trying to say, hey, you guys, you know.
But you don't hear from them.
You don't hear from them.
And when they pipe up against it, what happens? The Justice League, or what are they called? The
Justice Democrats.
Justice Democrats. Justice League. Sorry, they were different.
The Alexandria Communists out there.
Yeah. What do? They find a candidate to run against them. We must crush them.
Yes.
They're a non-believer.
Yeah.
It's, gotta say.
Yeah.
Just a teensy bit weird.
It is. It's scary. It is scary, like Alex said. We got to watch these people. But not just watch them, Alex.
We've got to expose them and oppose them at every turn. And, you know, I think you guys in California, you guys are on the forefront of this. Maybe not so much in the Northern California, but you're under the same state government. And, you know, you guys are seeing where this all leads. I think it's, you know, California itself
like the
is a giant
train.
Wake up call to America.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've got all these projects, the bullet train. I mean, how much have we spent on that that's going nowhere? We've got, you know, Solyndra and all those things. Yep, they were all here.
Yeah.
And what
taking the middle class out, and you're going to have, like, you know, I grew up in the third world. You know, it's a society where you have the uber wealthy and everybody else. And California is very quickly developing into a third world country where you have the rich elites, you know, in San Francisco and L.A., the Hollywood and the Silicon Valley. And then, you know, everybody else. And the middle class is fleeing for Texas and Florida. And, you know, it's crazy.
And they get to do whatever they want? Well, we don't. Bottom line, we don't. It's all for them and none for us. Hey, we're, believe it or not, out of time. That was really fast.
I want to weep like the glaciers.
No, we're going to play. We're going to play a nicer song. Many thanks to our guest, Alex Newman. Please,
thank you guys so much.
Check the site for all the information. We'll have them on soon. It's WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love off.
Kundiff.
And I'm Debbie Bacigalupi, the sit-in guest.
Yeah,
host.
Welcome.
Got everybody in here today. Got a full studio. Who's our sponsor this hour, Bill?
Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. The guys over at Team Power can do pretty much anything you want on the farm. We can work on tractors, work on mowers, work on pretty much anything. They can also give you a great deal on new equipment. Give them a call over there at 226-9226. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. Or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Can they stop global warming, Team Power?
Oh, they're already working on that. Yeah, guys out in the shop, they can. Man, they're tinkers. They can
tinkers.
Do it.
Tinkers. Classic. So you can find all the information about the show. We're not going to goof off so much today because we have a great guest for you. But you can find everything about the program and our guest and all the things we're speaking about at wethepeopleradio.us. So our guest today is Dr. Patrick Moore. You might have heard of him. He's been in the news just a tiny bit lately, a little more than usual. And we have this guest through our friend Debbie. So
yeah, and when Erin says a tiny bit, she is just kind of under exaggerating.
Yeah, tiny bit.
Yeah, he's been in the news a lot, and ever since the green new raw ugly deal has surfaced, it has been for many of us a gold mine because finally, after all these years of trying to expose this radical agenda called sustainable development, Alexandria O'Communist has made it so easy for us to talk about what these radical extreme plans are. So
in case you've been living under a rock, Dr. Patrick Moore, I just thought, you know, for maybe our friends who aren't paying attention, Dr. Patrick Moore has been a leader in the environment, in the international environmental field for over 30 years. And contrary to Google and Wikipedia, he is the founding member of Greenpeace and served for 9 years as president of Greenpeace Canada and 7 years as director of Greenpeace International. He's the leader of many campaigns, and Dr. Moore was a driving force shaping policy and direction while Greenpeace became the world's largest environmental activist organization. On the web, you can find him at ecosense.me.
Ecosense.me. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Moore, you are the only PhD, the only doctor.
The only actual scientist?
Yes. At Greenpeace as co-founder?
Well, of course, I left Greenpeace now. It dates me pretty badly, 33 years ago. But I was in the leadership for 15 years from the beginning of the organization until I left because I disagreed with the direction my fellow directors were taking it, none of whom had any formal science education. So I don't know of any scientist that is actually in the leadership of Greenpeace today. They are mostly political activists and mostly on the extreme left, which is kind of why I left, because the extreme left took over Greenpeace after 15 years of activism in which we did a lot of good things, saving the whales and stopping nuclear testing, both underground and in the atmosphere, and eventually really focusing on toxic dumping into the air and water and cleaned up a lot of places around the world. So I'm proud of what we did back then, but unfortunately, like they say, some organizations, they start out with good intentions. Eventually, they change into a kind of business because they got 300 people on the payroll, and then they become a racket, and that's what happened to Greenpeace.
So are you saying you've extracted yourself from the 98% of scientists that believe we're all going to die in 12 years?
Yeah. Well, that whole thing about the consensus is kind of laughable for two reasons. I mean, the first one is the hardcore one, and the fact is there are not 98 or 97 or whatever percent they say of scientists who believe that we are causing catastrophic climate change. And that's how they make it out. A large number of scientists do believe that humans are somehow involved in the changing climate in the last 150 years or so because we started using fossil fuels and put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But there's also a very large number of scientists who realize that that is not the main cause of climate change. The climate has been changing through the eons and millennia ever since the Earth was born, and that most of the causes of climate change are natural. And the more I study it, the more I realize that probably pretty well all the changes that have occurred in the climate over the millions and thousands of years are naturally induced by a number of factors, one of which is greenhouse gases, but actually water vapor is the main greenhouse gas, and it is far more abundant in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, and is at least 95% of the greenhouse effect, which means that carbon dioxide is an insignificant player in the whole thing, even if it is, you know, has a bit part.
So where does the water vapor come from?
The ocean.
Where it comes from.
Let me just give you the numbers. Carbon dioxide concentration in the global atmosphere is 0.04%. In other words, 0.04%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I mean, 400 parts per million sounds like a lot, but it's 400 parts per million, which is 0.04%. Whereas water is in the lower atmosphere between 1% and 5%, which is 25 to 125 times as high a concentration as CO2. And in addition, water vapor has a higher band of absorption of infrared radiation, which is what a greenhouse gas does. And therefore, molecule for molecule, water is a more powerful greenhouse gas than CO2, which relegates CO2 to somewhere between 1 and 3% of the greenhouse effect, which could easily be swamped by any number of other factors, because it's only if all else were equal that CO2 increasing would definitely cause some minor warming. But all else is never equal in these situations where there are a multitude of factors all operating out of sync with each other in a chaotic fashion. And that is why virtually everybody who knows anything knows that you cannot predict the future of the global climate with a computer model, for example. There's nobody who's capable of understanding the relationships among all these factors in that kind of detail to be able to predict this in a computer model. And all these predictions of runaway climate change are based on computer models. Again, they behave as though a computer model is a crystal ball. Well, actually, the crystal ball is a mythical object. It cannot predict the future any more than a computer model can predict the future. And the truth is, the output from a computer model is absolutely dependent on the inputs that you put into it.
Absolutely.
If you keep putting the same inputs into a computer model, it will never give you a different answer. It will always give you the same answer. And if the inputs you put in are not exactly right, it'll give you the wrong answer every time. And that's why it is foolish to believe people who are depending on computer models to predict the future of planet Earth, which is not the easiest thing. It was Yogi Berra who repeated someone else's statement. I'm not sure it was a scientist back further. But Yogi Berra liked to say predictions are difficult, especially about the future, and he was right about that.
Well, we've got to take a break here, but when we come back
in a minute and a half.
Oh, in a minute and a half. Okay, well then
it's
I
not
got
Bill's
a question.
Job.
If you have true or false, the CO2 levels of the planet have been much, much higher in the distant past than they are today. How do we explain that?
Well, in fact, CO2 sunk to the lowest level in the history of the Earth, for those who don't know, is 4.6 billion years. It sunk to the lowest level in the history of the Earth 20,000 years ago at the height of the last glaciation, because that was the coldest it got in the last 100,000 years. And at the height of the glaciation, the oceans get colder and absorb more gases from the atmosphere. So they sucked a lot of the CO2 out of the atmosphere and brought it down to 180 parts per million. Today it's at 400. So, and it, coming out of the ice age, it went back up to 280 from 180. So as the oceans warmed up again, it gave off CO2. The oceans gave off CO2 into the atmosphere. Sorry, this is complicated, but
not CO2 really. I think really and truly, but for the numbers, we learned these ideas in sixth grade. You know, when you learn about CO2 and how it makes plants grow.
But we've been wrong this
time. Now we've been wrong the whole time. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to chat some more about CO2 with our super special guest, Dr. Patrick Moore. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I see trees of green. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Oh, under the sea, under the sea. Nobody beat us, fry us, and eat us in fricassee. We want the non-fortunate to cook. Under the sea, we have to hook up. We got no trouble. Let me see bubbles under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
That was for Dr. Moore.
Yeah. We couldn't help it. We had to throw in a little mermaid for you.
Because we're talking to a doctor who understands ocean acidification and sea rise and all these things that we keep hearing about from people like Alexandria O'Communist. And these things that we're talking about on the show today on We the People Radio with Dr. Patrick Moore, Aaron Ryan, and Bill Cundiff and Debbie Bacigalupi.
I'm not near as qualified to talk about that as she is, because, you know, she was a bartender, and they talk to a lot of people.
They do.
And a lot of qualified people are in there drinking. And
everybody
and
knows when you've been drinking, everybody sounds smarter.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the average person like me, who's, you know, when I go into a room with Dr. Patrick Moore, in fact, Dr. Patrick Moore, you're going to be speaking coming up at a conference that I am so honored to be a part of, and it's called Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. So, guys, look up online, Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. And I'm telling you, when I walk into that room, the whole IQ of the room is just going to drop.
Well, you have that to look forward to.
But, you know,
well, I appreciate it.
But something, Dr. Moore, that you're famous for, and I've seen your presentations. I was with you at the Paris conference, and where we had all those protesters protesting, all these great scientists like yourself. Dr. Bill Carter and Dr. Willie Soon, it was just a great lineup of people, is they want to refute your science. And one of your areas of expertise is, you know, this thing called ocean acidification. Can you tell us a little bit about it and what propaganda is being put out there that, you know, we could start as just common human beings, not with the IQ of a scientist, can come back and refute and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not true.
Well, you know, at least with global warming and carbon dioxide, there is this hypothesis that because CO2 is a greenhouse gas, it will cause a little warming. But with ocean acidification, you've actually got a complete 100% fabrication. There is no basis for this so-called hypothesis, because what they're saying is that the ocean will absorb more CO2. If we put more CO2 into the atmosphere, the ocean will absorb more CO2. And that is a distinct possibility. However, I was mentioning before the break that CO2 is now the lowest it's ever been in the history of the Earth. So the evolution of life for 3 billion plus years has taken place with far higher levels of CO2 in the atmosphere. As a matter of fact, CO2 was basically running out before we came along and started burning fossil fuels and putting some of the CO2 back into the atmosphere where it came from in the first place to make the fossil fuels, because they're made from plants. And plants sucked up fossil fuels to make themselves and then got buried and turned into coal and oil and gas. So ocean acidification is based on the idea that with CO2 at one of the lowest it's been in the history of the Earth, too much of it is going to get into the ocean and kill everything. So right off the bat, it's a stupid concept.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Is that also part of the coral bleaching argument?
Oh, yeah. They always talk about that.
No, that's blamed on heat, that the ocean is too hot for the coral. But the problem with that argument is the area they've been focusing on is the Great Barrier Reef. And the Great Barrier Reef is actually not the hottest ocean in the world. The hottest ocean in the world is the oceans around Indonesia and the Philippines, and that is where the highest diversity of corals and reef fish exist on this planet. So if the highest diversity of corals and the highest diversity of reef fish exist in the hottest ocean on Earth, what are they doing telling us that the oceans are getting too hot? Because we know for a fact that when the Earth was hotter, corals spread over a much larger area of the globe. Now they're confined pretty much to deep equatorial zones.
Hmm.
The fact is, coral can live in much warmer climates than it does now, but I see that the AOC Green New Deal is predicting, and I think the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change of the United Nations is saying the same thing, that 90% of the corals will die if the temperature goes up 2 degrees. Well, the temperature going up 2 degrees is nothing compared to how warm the Earth has been for hundreds of millions of years in the past, when coral reefs occupied a far larger area. So just by that, we know that ocean acidification is a crock.
So the
main reason for knowing that it's phony is that they're making it seem as if the coral animals, like these are called the marine calcifiers, like coral reefs and shellfish, coccolithophores, which are a phytoplankton that make calcium carbonate shells for themselves, they're acting as though that calcification process is taking place in the sea. It is not. It is taking place inside these organisms, where they control their internal biochemistry.
Oh.
And they can control their internal biochemistry like a muscle growing near the shoreline where a river comes out, where you have vast changes in pH, in salinity, in oxygen content, and every other thing. They survive there with a huge fluctuation in different ocean parameters. So there's no reason that this would affect all the species of coral and calcifying species in the sea in any different way. It's a complete fabrication. It's totally made up. It has no basis in fact, and you don't actually hear a lot about it anymore since I wrote my paper, peer-reviewed, double-blind paper, showing that it was a complete fabrication about 4 years ago.
So what?
But they still talk about it.
So what's causing the coral bleaching, or is it even happening?
Coral bleaching is caused when the ocean heats up to an extreme temperature above 30 degrees Celsius for a period of time. And most people don't know, but corals are a symbiotic relationship between an animal and a plant. The polyp, which is the animal, is living inside the coral, and little hole where it comes out, its tentacles come out at night, and it feeds, just like many marine species do. They have tentacles that come out and feed on plankton in the sea. But corals also take in plankton into their bodies, plankton of a particular species. The thing that makes coral a color is the plankton inside them. Because the animal in there, plankton being a plant, of course, so they're a combination of an animal and a plant. The animal is clear. It has no color. So when the polyp ejects the plankton when it's hot, this is what happens during bleaching, is they eject their plankton, then the coral becomes white because they are basically see-through, and the coral is made of calcium carbonate, which is white. And so you see the skeleton, it looks like a skeleton of the coral, when in fact living animals are still inside there. And when the water cools down, they take the plankton back in. The color of the coral is dependent on the species of the plankton that it is taken in. They're extremely selective in that way. They don't just take in any old phytoplankton. They take in a species that they prefer, and the plankton then is doing photosynthesis and giving them sugar. In return, the zooplankton gives the phytoplankton, the plant, protection from predators because it's inside the polyp.
Sure.
So it's a complicated thing. Coral reefs are an amazing creature that has done this and creates these huge, I call it calcium carbonate reefs, which is what limestone is made from. Limestone, marble, and chalk are all of life origin, made by marine calcifying species, which learn to do this, many different species. You know, it's crabs and shrimp and lobsters and clams and mussels and barnacles and all the shellfish and the corals. And then there's a number of zooplankton and phytoplankton, which are so extremely small people don't know about them, but the foraminifera and the coccolithophores, the former a zooplankton, an animal, the latter, a phytoplankton, a plant, also make calcareous shells for themselves. So many marine species learned to make armor plating out of calcium carbonate to protect their soft bodies from predation. And as a result, they are combining carbon dioxide with calcium in the water and pulling CO2 out of the ocean. And when the plants and animals that do this die, their skeletons fall on the bottom and form the limestone, marble, and chalk deposits that amount to 8% of the Earth's crust. This has been going on for 500 million years.
That's fascinating.
And I could go on for 500 million years, too, but please don't let me.
No. My gosh. I want to go down scuba diving right now. I'm not kidding. I'm like itching to go scuba diving, Dr. Moore. And check
you
out
go
this.
To Indonesia. Go to the Komodo Islands from Bali and over to Flores, or go up into Raja Ampat in Papua, which used to be called Irian Jaya. And now called Papua. It's part of Papua, where Papua New Guinea is the eastern end of it and Papua is the western end of it. Up in there, you just go into the Coral Triangle anywhere. The Solomon Islands are included. The Philippines are included. And pretty much the whole of the eastern part of the Indonesian Sea is included. And that is where the highest diversity of corals and rockfish are, the reef fish are. And if you go there and spend a week snorkeling there, you will wonder if heaven could be any better.
Oh,
see, and all this scare tactic, you know, that we're killing the ocean and bleaching the coral and this and that, it plays really well because most people haven't seen that themselves. And so they're just taking these folks' word for it. And we all, what's his name, Jim? What's his name? He always talks about
it. Oh, Hansen.
No, Jim, the other one, the funny one. And he always talks about it's fear porn. He said, you know, people have just gotten addicted to fear porn on all this stuff. They just like to be scared. So they give them a bad scenario, and they just keep reading more about how bad it is.
Well, whether it's sea rise or plastic in the ocean or coral bleaching or ocean acidification.
Oh, we're currently sitting in a state that banned straws. We're going to save the world by banning drinking straws. We've got to take
The presentation I'm giving at the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness in July in Tucson is titled 12 Fake Invisible Catastrophes and Threats of Doom.
Nice.
Can't wait.
Classic.
My hypothesis is that because people can't see things that are invisible, like CO2 and whatever's supposed to be bad inside GM food and radiation from nuclear reactors, they can't see that, so people can make up stories however they want about all of that that's going on. And even really remote things like polar bears and coral reefs, who can go and count the coral reefs and the polar bears and check out their health? So when things are
zero
invisible
people.
Or remote, we depend on activists and scientists who are on the government payroll and media to tell us what's going on. We can't see for ourselves. And so that's why most of these scare stories are about things that are invisible or remote.
Exactly. We're going to take a really quick break. Our guest is Patrick Moore, Dr. Patrick Moore. He is a PhD in ecology at the Institute of Resource Ecology and the University of British Columbia back in 1972. So, and it got really quiet all of a sudden. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. It is going to be a nice, bright, sunshiny day. One of these days, we're having protracted rain here. Dr. Moore, can you go? Do you want to talk a little bit about your erasure from history before we run out of time? I mean, we've got some time left, but because that's a very interesting phenomenon. If you pipe up against the established environmental machinery, they erase you regardless of your knowledge or your history in the movement or any of that. You just got eliminated from, wasn't it Wikipedia or something?
Wikipedia and Google.
You're now not involved. You never had any involvement with Greenpeace, even though you started it.
Well, they're basically ashamed of me because I'm telling the truth.
That's why we like you.
So, historical revisionism is as old as the hills. You know, and George Orwell understood that in his book 1984, where he basically says, you know, if you control the past, you control the present, and if you control the present, you control the future. And what these people are doing is they are basically trying to erase the fact that I was one of the founding directors of Greenpeace and on the first voyage of Greenpeace, and then, unlike anyone else, spent the next 15 years in their leadership going as we evolved into an international organization. My last 6 years, where I was still president of Greenpeace Canada during that period because it was one of the national organizations, I was also one of five directors of Greenpeace International. And so I was in the top committee for those 15 years, and not many other people survived that at either a life level or a political level, which, because you can imagine the internal politics in an organization like that. And so, the thing that bothers me the most is Wikipedia will not let the subject of their biography, a living person, contribute to their own biography without going through all these committees, whereas other people just can come in and change your biography and then have to defend it later. And that's what's happened recently with my biography, is they have got some kind of adjudication out of these bunch of leftists who edit the Wikipedia website that, on balance, I'm not really a founder of Greenpeace, and they've changed my PhD from ecology to forestry. Now, I'd be perfectly happy to have a PhD in forestry, but my PhD is actually in ecology, so I think I should be allowed to have that in my biography. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there. They color every single thing about me negatively. And so I've got to figure out now how to get into Wikipedia and get that changed, because the reason Google took me off the list of the founders of Greenpeace is because Wikipedia did. And Google has some kind of algorithm that goes out into the cloud and collects this information from what's in Wikipedia, I think.
And,
I'm
you know,
not sure any, how they,
anyone, you
how
know,
they
I,
do that.
I love this example, just like I love that we have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez now, because without AOC, you know, we've been piping up for years and years, you included, Dr. Moore, about this, you know, this radical agenda for the 21st century. And now that, you know, she's come out, she's made our work easier for us. And same with Wikipedia, because I, the other day, went into the history section of Wikipedia, one of the tabs, and you can compare current versions of the Wikipedia for Greenpeace, for example, to older versions. And I went back to 2018, and sure enough, it says that you were one of the co-founders and, you know, a critic of Greenpeace, a co-founder and a critic of Greenpeace. I think, if I remember correctly, now in 2019, they have you as just a critic of Greenpeace.
So he was a blasphemer, so, you know.
And so, you know, all these I like to call them anti-human humans, because they truly are against, you know, truth and some of us human beings. You know, it just gives an opportunity for people to do an easy research on for themselves to find out how what we're saying is actually true. We're not making this up. This is not hype. They are trying to erase you.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I was going to mention, though, that I'm really happy you have a sponsor who sells tractors, because I'm huge on ag and farmers. Most people, I think, believe their food comes from the supermarket, but I'm much more aware of that they actually have farms out there in the country where they're toiling every day in different weather conditions, and, you know, they put farmers down almost, and yet farmers probably know more about the weather and the climate than any other category of people on Earth. But what really makes me laugh about the AOC things is I bet those tractor people are really looking forward to the battery-powered tractors and combines they're going to have to use
solar power
to grow the food one of these days, you know. And also the battery-powered semi-trailer trucks that have to carry 40 tons of food
into the middle of New York City so that people don't starve to death in their high-rise there.
Well, it's funny, it's funny you mentioned that, because here, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, UC Davis came out with a program where their students were going to, they had the farming thing all figured out, and they knew how to do it better than the actual farmers, and they were going to go out and prove it and raise crops in a much more efficient manner, a sustainable manner. And I don't think that program lasted much past a year, and they realized, my God, I've got to get my hands dirty, and I've got to work hard, and it's hot,
sweaty
work, and maybe you guys know how to do it better than we do. And they dropped the whole thing. You don't hear anything about it now. It's amazing.
Well, it's too bad what's happened to the universities. At least when I went to university, was I hate to tell you how long ago that was, but I was lucky. I had really good talks, and I got a really decent education, and ahead of my PhD committee, quoting a famous Canadian who said, get out of the ivory tower and get into the control tower. And so that really affected me. I realized I should, instead of just going back into teaching after I'd been taught, because they do say something about that, or about how those who can do and those who can't teach. I mean, it's not a very nice thing to say, but I wanted to learn how to do things and to get out into the real world and figure things out. And I've been very lucky in being able to do that and to have had quite a few different roles as time has gone along in many different areas. After I left Greenpeace, it's 33 years now, and I've done a lot of things that I've really enjoyed. And it's actually kind of nice now to get a little bit of media after being in the woodshed for a long time, because I was the main spokesman for Greenpeace for many, many years. And when I left, I got kind of shut out by the mainstream. But now I find that it's only the fake news that's saying I'm not a founder of Greenpeace. And, of course, the anti-everything eco people, the so-called green people. But I'm being recognized as the co-founder of Greenpeace in many platforms and many media and blogs, and so that's quite gratifying.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. Your book, Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout, The Making of a Sensible Environmentalist, is I'm sure a must read. I don't have it yet, so I'm assuming it's in the book. But we've got, you know, 2 or 3 minutes here till we have to take another break. And I'm just curious if you could kind of give us the elevator speech on why you left. You know, I mean, what were the, because, I mean, I'm 57, so I kind of saw a little bit of what Greenpeace was doing. But for people who weren't paying attention or who maybe are too young, 30 years ago, how did they go off the rails in your mind? Like, what was it made you want to walk away?
You know, when we started, we had a very strong humanitarian orientation to save human civilization from all of nuclear war, which we also realized would be an environmental catastrophe at the same time. So we combined green and peace, with green being the environment and peace being human civilization living peacefully together. And so as time went on and we saved the whales and got into the baby seals and the toxic waste, somehow that piece sort of got dropped off and all there was left was the green. And by the time I left in the mid-80s, human beings were being characterized as the enemies of nature, the enemies of the Earth, as if we were from Mars or something. When in fact, the first rule of ecology is that all life is one, evolved from the same life in the beginning. And we're no different than the other species in that sense. We're not like some kind of alien being. And to suggest that humans are the only bad species is way too much like original sin for me, and I'm not into that sort of way of thinking about people, that we're the only bad thing on the planet. And so that was the high level. The sharp end of the stick, though, was my fellow directors decided that Greenpeace should adopt its next campaign to ban chlorine worldwide. I said, you guys, it's one of the elements in the periodic table, you know.
Like, chlorine.
I'm not sure we can be banning one of those. But more importantly, adding chlorine to drinking water and our swimming pools and spas was the biggest advance in the history of public health to prevent waterborne communicable diseases from spreading. And most of our synthetic pharmaceuticals, medicines, are made with chlorine chemistry. because it's toxic to bacteria and therefore the most important element for medicine. And so it fell on deaf ears with, you know, they just said, oh, we'll figure that out later, you know. And so they embarked upon a campaign to ban chlorine worldwide, and I left because I could not be in an organization that was campaigning on something so stupid as that.
You get down to the part where you start looking around and go, I think these guys might be dummies. Huh, well, that's a good reason to leave. That makes perfect sense.
You're not kidding. Today, they've morphed into like a bunch of college kids on a summer cruise, let me tell you. They got a $32 million boat, and they're floating around the world on it pretending it's a sailboat when it has an 1,850-horsepower diesel engine in it.
Uh-oh.
And we had like a $40,000 boat, and we saved the whales with it, you know.
We've got to take a really quick break, but I'll tell you what, the mocking on that topic could go on forever.
It could.
Really, really quick break here. You're listening to We the People Radio. Our guest is Dr. Patrick Moore. You can find everything about the program and listen to the archive after and send it to a friend. You can get it at wethepeopleradio.us.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. Just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. We keep on waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. Sunshine, wow, I'm walking on sunshine. Wow, I'm walking on sunshine.
Tell you what, the silliness goes on and on and on. So what other, if we could here in this last segment, if there's one other part that, you know, if you were king for a day and you could just, you know, give everyone an injection so they could figure out this one thing, what would you pick, Dr. Moore?
I would say that carbon dioxide is the building block of life, the currency of life on this planet. And is not a pollutant, and they should stop demonizing it because they got it exactly 100% backwards. The fact of the matter is all life on Earth is carbon-based. The carbon in all carbon-based life comes from one and only one molecule, and that is carbon dioxide in the air and in the water. All the carbon dioxide came from the interior of the Earth when it was much hotter through volcanic action, in the same as the water did. H2O and CO2 are combined by plants to make sugars like glucose, which is a carbohydrate, carbon, hydrate, water. Those two are the most important building blocks of all life. And the sugar is the basis of the energy for all life, including ourselves and the birds and everything else. So carbon dioxide is the central molecule in life. And as far as we know, the life on this Earth is the only life in the universe. You can guess all you want that maybe there's another million planets with life on them somewhere, but we don't know of one. This is the only one we actually know of. So if we were reasonable in our thinking, I'm not saying we should worship carbon dioxide, but we should certainly give it its rightful place in the scheme of things, which is that it is the building block of life, and we should be knowledgeable of that.
And why is that so? I mean, okay, so Leighton Stewart was on our program a bunch of years ago, actually, and he was talking about CO2, and he had said, he had told us, really simple math, 400 parts per million of CO2 in the regular air as we're standing around. But if somebody were to drop on the ground and you did mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on them, you would breathe into them 40,000 parts per million of CO2. And so if CO2 is a pollutant, everyone we ever did mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on should have died instantly. And yet they did not. And every
That is correct. Our breath is 1,000 times when we exhale is 1,000 times the level of the CO2 that we breathed in, because we take in oxygen and oxidize the sugars and the starches and the fats which we make from the sugars in our bodies and breathe out carbon dioxide as a waste product from us ourselves as animals. And then that waste product feeds the plants. So the Earth's life system has evolved into a beautiful cycle where the plants use CO2 to make sugars, and then we eat the sugars, and we make CO2 back for the plants again. They make the oxygen for us. There was no oxygen in the atmosphere until plants evolved. It is purely a life-made substance in the atmosphere, whereas carbon dioxide came from the middle of the Earth, as did water. But the oxygen in the atmosphere came from living things, and it's the only reason we can survive. If people don't understand that very fundamental aspect of the water and the oxygen and the carbon dioxide, I mean, then something's really wrong. And, you know, the problem is the politicians, right at the top end of it, the Greens create the scare stories in the media. But the politicians pay the scientists to give them scare stories dressed up as sciencey stuff so that they can scare the people into voting for them on the basis that they're going to save their kids and grandchildren from a terrible end in fire and brimstone. Like, this idea that the world is going to end in 12 years is... Are there three people out of the 7.5 billion who actually believe that? I just can't understand how many people fall for this stuff. The truth is, though, is that in a poll that was done very recently, out of 20 issues that are top-of-mind issues in the public, climate change was number 18. And from what I understand, the average, when most people are asked how much they would spend to solve this problem, is like $10. No, people really don't like carbon taxes, and they don't like to have to pay. On the other hand, the climate catastrophe, climate crisis people make them feel guilty for driving their SUV, so they feel guilty that they're going to kill their grandchildren, and they're afraid. So fear and guilt together is what the climate thing is all about, and fear and guilt together opens people's wallets. And so it's really just, it is a racket, the whole thing. It's not just a hoax and a scam. It's an actual racket.
It is. If you go back, if you can find a copy of Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, you could almost go page by page and debunk every single thing he predicted in that book, because it's already come to pass. The timelines that he's put on all that stuff has already come and gone, and none of it happened. So you would think that people would kind of take a step back and go, wow, maybe this isn't true.
Maybe he's a dum-dum.
Well, yeah. Here we are again now with OAC or AOC. AOC or
Alexandria O-Communist.
O-Communist, yes. Now, here we are again. 12 years from now, we're all going to die. I'm with you. I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there that believe any of it. But yet, here we are.
But the frightening part is, well, Debbie and I were looking for music for a group of shows that we've pre-recorded here. We were looking for music, and I swear almost, well, I'm going to say 90% of the songs that are online that are about the environment are being sung by children.
Yeah, it was overwhelming, and the views have been like 30 million to 100 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're the
little kids.
The little kids are the educators.
And just coming back, sorry to not give Dr. Moore some time here in these last few seconds here.
He only has 2.5 minutes.
But, you know, I just got back from the most recent United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and Dr. Moore, I cannot express to you how many young people were at this conference, and like you, I've been to several of these conferences. And they all
drove there.
We
right?
were shocked at how many and teenagers and elementary school students that, you know.
Yes, but they are being brought there by adults like Al Gore.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And this is absolutely child abuse, what they are doing. It's worse than child abuse, if you could find anything worse than that. Because this is what Nazis do. This is what communists do. They use children and they get them to sing songs about the great Hitler's youth and all of that, you know. This is what they're doing. They're using children to appeal to people because people love children. And then when children are taught to do doomsday stories, you know, and this thing about, you know, Al Gore and all his predictions not come true, the problem is people have a memory of about 10 years. So somebody says, we have 10 years to save the world from doom. 10 years goes by, doom doesn't happen. They say, oh, yes, but we only have 10 more years to save the world from doom.
It's a cycle.
David Suzuki, who is a famous Canadian environmental catastrophe guy, has done it four times in his lifetime. They just keep repeating it. And it's been actually repeated throughout the ages. The end is nigh. A guy standing on the corner with a sign that says the end is nigh has been going on for thousands of years, and it never comes true. Yes, there are wars and horrible circumstances, but those are caused by bad people. And the people who are driving their cars and putting CO2 into the atmosphere are actually returning a balance to the global carbon cycle by fertilizing the plants. And that's why we have to turn this whole narrative completely on its head, because it's 100% backwards. Carbon dioxide is entirely beneficial to both the planet, the environment, and to civilization, because it will make our food crops grow faster, and it will make the earth greener. So it's good all around. There's nothing bad about it. And if it does make the planet a slight bit warmer, that will be good too, because this is one of the coldest periods in the history of planet Earth. If you go back hundreds of millions of years, it's been warmer than it is today 99% of the time, and life flourished on this planet all through those warm periods. This is a fact.
Well, we appreciate the time. We are flat out of time, but I hope people will go to wethepeopleradio.us and read your article, The Positive Role of Human Emissions of CO2.
And get his
book!
And
we've been visiting with Dr. Patrick Moore. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. I love your music policy, by the way.
Outstanding. We'll have you back anytime.
All right.